You're with Senator Malcolm Roberts on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Senator Malcolm Roberts from Australia, and I'm with Ian Plimer, Professor Ian Rutherford Plimer. So, Ian, I'll read the conclusions from my study, Restoring Scientific Integrity, that summarizes what CSIRO has failed to do. First of all, CSIRO's evidence for unprecedented change was easily refuted, and a major breakdown of the peer review system was revealed in both Marcotte and Le Cavalier papers. Secondly, CSIRO provided no quantified evidence that humans are responsible for any particular amount of change in any climate factor, nor any climate variable. Nothing. CSIRO would not attribute danger to carbon dioxide from human activity, and have not provided evidence to allow any politicians, including ministers, to attribute danger. CSIRO stated that the determination of danger was a matter for the public or for politicians. Australian climate policies have never been based on empirical evidence and logical scientific reasoning. After reviewing the peer-reviewed papers that CSIRO cited, it is inconceivable that government policy should be based on the unverified assumption that a peer-reviewed paper is accurate and contains the best available research. That's particularly so when key data has been unscientifically fabricated, as was the case in the first paper and second paper that CSIRO presented on temperature. As Australia's premier government-funded climate science agency, CSIRO's gross deficiencies need to be investigated to establish reasons for CSIRO's deterioration. The fact that CSIRO abrogated claims of danger to government ministers reveals that it has been afraid to speak out about obviously politically driven deviations from science. That includes journalists driving deviations from science. Ninth point, integrity and accountability need to be restored for both research and for presenting scientific conclusions, as well as for scrutinizing political claims and policies supposedly based on science. Next, the CSIRO Climate Group's pathetic and inadequate case does not justify spending tens of billions of dollars, nor does it justify the destruction of trillions, and I mean that word sincerely, trillions of dollars of wealth as a result of climate policies that hurt families, export Australian jobs, and erode our national security, our ability to defend and secure our borders. The onus is now on the federal government to scrap climate policies unless CSIRO can provide accurate, repeatable, and verifiable empirical scientific evidence within a logical scientific framework that proves carbon dioxide from human activity detrimentally affects climate variability and needs to be cut. The proposed cuts need to be specified in terms of the amount, the impact and effects, together with the cost of making and not making the cuts. What do you think, mate?
Well, we get told that the science is settled. Now, if the science is settled, we say, thank you very much, we are now going to disband you. We'll disband the climate division of the CSIRO. We will disband all the climate institutes at the universities. We'll disband the climate group in the Bureau of Meteorology. But we sincerely thank you for all the work that you've done and demonstrating that the science is settled. I think that's the easiest way to solve the problem.
Well said. Let's continue on with their claims of consensus and their claims of that they haven't provided the science. So what we then see from the government is that they claim they rely upon 97% of scientists claiming that they have the science, yet not one of them has produced the science. What I've done, Ian, as you know, is I've interviewed world-leading scientists on my findings of the CSIRO, and they have all justified and endorsed my claims about CSIRO. I'll go through a list of them. Professor John Christie, climatologist, mathematician, University of Alabama analyst, and presenter of global temperature data from NASA satellites. The man who does that. Professor David Leggetts, a climatologist and statistician. Dr. Craig Idso, a climatologist. These are state climatologists in the United States. They are climatologists, have been appointed climatologists for their state. Dr. Niels Maurer, world's number one sea level expert. The late Dr. Niels Maurer. Professor Nir Shaviv, atmospheric physicist from Israel. Professor Will Happer, physicist. Dr. Willie Soon, atmospheric physicist. yourself, you've done this. Steve McIntyre, mathematician and statistician who tore apart Marcot within 2 weeks of its release in 2013. Bill Kinnamont, a former senior Bureau of Meteorology official and meteorologist. Emeritus Professor Garth Paltridge, former CSIRO senior researcher. Dr. Howard Brady, geologist, another one of your kin, Ian, and an Antarctica researcher. Dr. John McLean, a climate scientist who did the first audit on the Global Historical Climate Network temperature data. It had never been audited, never, until John did that. And he found glaring problems with it. And that's the temperature data that the UN relies upon and the CSIRO rely upon. Tony Heller, geologist and engineer auditing NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies data. Susan Crockford, polar bear researcher. Professor Louis Mollion, Brazil Bureau of Meteorology. And Dr. David Evans, who had been working in as a climate modeler and then has realized that it's all rubbish. I mean, do we need anyone else? They haven't provided the evidence, and we've got these scientists.
You used a very interesting word, audit. Now, all public and private companies are required by law to have an audit. Are the books wrong? Is someone tickling the till? Is the company operating while insolvent? Now, an audit, a scientific audit, should look at very similar things. Are the claims being made supported by evidence? Are people over icing the cake in order to get their next research grant? Are the people making these claims qualified to make those claims? So if, for example, you in the minerals business make a claim that this mineral deposit is that big or this big, you have to have certain qualifications to make such statements. So the normal due diligence processes that we have operating any other business besides government has an audit. Yet these government businesses are dealing with trillions of dollars and no one audits them and says, wait a minute, folks, we might have got the fundamentals wrong. And this is why I urge you to continue this line about show me the evidence that human emissions drive global warming. Because if there is no evidence, then the whole white shoe brigade industry of subsidized solar and wind coming off that shouldn't be there. Then the next great subsidy stage of having subsidized hydrogen from subsidized wind and solar shouldn't be there. And we find that the emperor has no clothes. This, to me, is by far the best approach. Ask simple questions. Don't make statements, ask questions. And that's what an auditor does. And with my various roles in life at present, I'm constantly dealing with auditors under US law, Canadian law, UK law and Australian law. They ask questions and you have to satisfy the auditors with your answer. If not, you have broken the law and you can be fined or go to jail. And I can't see why the laws should be any different from someone making an extraordinary scientific claim which requires a taxpayer to spend trillions. We need an audit, and we need audits every year, as every company has to have. And I can't see why we can't have scientific audits all the time. Now, Professor Peter Ridd did a scientific audit of what the coral reef scientists were stating, and he showed that it was wrong. There was a lot to be desired. Those audits should happen every year. We taxpayers are putting billions every year into science research. Where are the audits?
Right. Now I'm going to feed you a really a tender morsel, Professor Plimer. We have had two natural real-world experiments on this these climate claims. In 2009, we had the global financial crisis. In 2009, the following year, we had a recession around the world, a very severe recession in most countries. Australia wasn't in recession thanks to our amazing exports of mineral products from this country. Every other country just about was in a major recession, not a minor recession, a severe recession. When that happens, people use less hydrocarbon fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, which meant that the production of carbon dioxide from human activity decreased. In 2009, there was less carbon dioxide produced from human activity than in 2008. And yet, the level of carbon dioxide in Earth's atmosphere continued increasing. In 2020, we had COVID, almost a depression around the world. Again, a very severe recession, most countries around the world. And when that happened, we again used less coal, oil, and natural gas. And so the human output of carbon dioxide in 2020 was less than in 2019. And yet the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere continued increasing because nature alone creates, determines the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Isn't this a perfectly natural real-world experiment, Professor Plimer?
Well, what it does is it shows us that the common figure that's thrown around of 3% of all emissions are of human origin might actually be wrong. It might actually be 1%. And I argue this in my book, Green Murder. I argue from volcanic emissions. I argue it using that 2007, 2008, 2020 to the present COVID crisis, that we have got these natural experiments. And it may well be that human emissions have absolutely no effect whatsoever on global climate. And if it is, it's probably close to the order of accuracy of measurement. And if it is able to be measured, then the effect that Australia has in emitting 1.3% of the world's annual emissions, which is 3% of the total planetary emissions, is 9 parts of 1/11 of bugger all. So why are we having conniptions about a fractional amount of carbon dioxide emitted by humans? Why are we having conniptions when we cannot show that this has any effect on global climate? And shouldn't we be spending our hard-earned dollars on other things rather than spending billions every year on climate research, trillions on putting in infrastructure that we know already will fail? So I think once you get a populist idea like this, it takes a long time to grind through the system before people realise it's wrong. Populist politics isn't very sensible. And we see that ultimately this tulip mania, which we're undergoing, leads to tears. We've seen it before, South Sea Bubble, the Dutch tulip mania, and we're right on that path again. And there's something rather fundamental about our opposition. Our opposition won't argue data. As soon as we raise a point, they attack us with hatred and with venom. And why do they do that? They do that, I think, for two reasons. The first is that they've been beneficiaries of a dumbed-down scientific education whereby they haven't got any science and they can't argue because they haven't been taught critical thinking. So the only response they've got is to be angry. And the second thing is there's no evidence. So we're seeing all these clues that we are being fed probably the greatest policy damaging process for a very long period of time. The one before that was communism.
Here, here. And just think about this too, everyone at home. Hard-earned dollars is what Professor Ian Plimer just mentioned, our hard-earned dollars. If we cannot, by cutting our carbon dioxide production, human production of carbon dioxide, severely, as in two major recessions in the last 14 years, if that had no impact on the level of carbon dioxide, on reducing the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, why the hell do they want to steal our land, raise our taxes, impose gut-wrenching regulations on us? That's what we have to ask. The natural experiment in 2009 and 2020 showed that our massive cutting of carbon dioxide from human activity had no impact whatsoever. Neither will taxes, neither will regulations, neither will continue to steal, neither will the continued stealing of farmers' land. Let's move on. This was this climate sham was first raised by a Liberal politician, Baum, in federal parliament in 1975. He was the first one to raise the possibility that human, or the claim that human activity carbon dioxide from human activity affects our climate. The first prime minister to raise it was Bob Hawke. He raised it sometime after 1983, and he first raised it himself as an MP in 1980. And then we had John Howard go on the bandwagon. And what they quite often claim is that it's based upon UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change results. Ian, I've analysed the UN reports. 1990 was the first one. 1995 was the second one. 2001 was the third one. 2007 was the fourth one. 2013 was the next fifth one. 2000 and just recently, 2020 was the sixth one. Sorry, 2022 was the sixth one. In each of those papers, they have one single core chapter that is supposedly showing that carbon dioxide from human activity affects climate. In 2001, it was chapter 12. In 2007, it was chapter 9. In 2013, it was chapter 10. In those sole chapters, and in the latest one, the same applies. There has never been any evidence presented that carbon dioxide from human activity affects climate. But instead, what we have is a summary for policymakers that's dumbed down for politicians and journalists that is full of crap. It has got no evidence whatsoever in it. What about the UN IPCC, Ian?
Well, the UN IPCC is not a scientific organisation. It is a political organisation. Its brief is to show that human emissions drive global warming. That brief comes out in a report which has two parts to it. One is a summary at the beginning, and that's for journalists and politicians, most of whom are ill-educated, and it's written in a very alarmist language. And that summary is normally totally unrelated to the scientific text, which in the latest one was just short of 4,000 pages. And that is, again, baffling people with bullshit. And there's just so much information there that it's very hard for the average person to work out what's going on. So they have to actually trust it. Now, I don't, because there is a huge amount of information out there that has the contrary view. The book that I put out 10 years ago, Heaven and Earth, I had 3.5
marvelous
scientific papers which show that human emissions don't drive global warming. In the latest book, I've only got 1,700 scientific papers that show that human emissions don't drive global warming. Those papers are not listed in the IPCC reports. Those IPCC reports omit any contrary information whatsoever. And so it is very much a partisan view, fulfilling the requirements of their brief, and that is to show we're all going to fry and die. And it's very much the view of an anonymous group of rather shady people who love their jaunts and conferences and write a few words every few years. And for that, there's fame and fortune, and there's power. And there's these faceless people who are creating a power structure whereby we pay.
Hear, hear. We'll go to an ad break now, and then we'll come back and we'll listen to more from Professor Ian Rutherford-Plimer.
TNT Radio's Christina Borgeson.
Anyway, let's get right to it. I want to talk about the World Health Organization's non-pharmaceutical health measures for mitigating the risk and impact of epidemic and pandemic influenza that was written in 2019. And because you talked about the striking differences between that and the way the COVID policies were carried out.
Yeah, and really credit where credit's due. It's Team Panda that did this analysis work and did the deep digging to uncover all this. Clearly, the World Health Organization and Mr. Tedros is compromised in some way that makes it so that they are not able to stick to their decisions the World Health Organization has a number of structural issues going on which compromise its objectivity.
Christina Borgeson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, yeah, that's the stuff. Oh, I haven't been through the car wash in ages. My gears are all clogged up and my wheels are as stiff as boards. Oh, and you could do with driving me a little more sensibly. All that revving actually increases CO2 emissions. Changing gears at lower revs can save you money too. And they say us cars don't care about the environment. Honestly, I don't know why I bother. Oh, yes, all just there. That's not...
Are you thinking what your car's thinking? Find out how to drive down your emissions and fuel costs by up to £120 a year at tfl.gov.uk.
We are the boy band.
Your tween made you see.
We are the boy band.
It's painful concert number three.
We are the boy band. We're 5 and 19. We are the boy band. Always singing on key.
You love your kids enough to take them to see their favorite band. Love them enough to make sure they're buckled up in the back seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
This is Senator Malcolm Roberts. Welcome back. And I've got my special guest, Ian Plimer. Before I move on with Ian, this is TNT Radio, where the only thing we mandate is the truth. And you'll get the truth from Professor Ian Plimer. Ian, we have a fabulous researcher in Australia, an IT specialist, also a climate scientist with peer-reviewed papers published. And he pointed out that in an analysis of this UN IPCC's own data, only 5 reviewers endorsed the claim that carbon dioxide from human activity is a danger and needs to be cut. Only 5. And there's doubt they are even scientists. Yet we're told there are thousands of scientists. What's going on?
Well, we're not told the truth. And I know who you're referring to. That was a magnificent piece of work he did for his PhD. We're not told the truth. Many of these reports are written by activists. Many of them are written by Greenpeace officials. Few of them are written by scientists, and very, very few indeed are written by eminent scientists. So this is propaganda at best. At worst, it may well be indeed are written by eminent scientists. So this is propaganda at best. At worst, it may well be part of a great reset. So you used the word truth. Now, you are regarded as controversial. I am regarded as controversial. Why? Because we use facts and speak the truth. And if you speak the truth, you never have to remember what you said. And this is why when you challenge those activists, they get very, very angry, because they have to argue from first principles and justify their statements, which they cannot do. They don't have the methods of argument, logic, analysis, and they certainly don't have any repeatable facts. So you get called controversial because your facts do not agree with their emotional opinions. And the use of language and the capture of language now has been a major weapon in attacking the average person to make sure that they do not use certain words. Unfortunately, and I must have a lot of Broken Hill lead in my blood, and I worked at Broken Hill for decades. Unfortunately, I don't abide by those new social constraints, and I will use the vernacular to describe things that we have used those words for half a century. So part of cancelling you and cancelling me and shutting us down is control of the language, and calling us nutcases or controversial or extreme or right-wing. This demonstrates that our opponents cannot argue.
Exactly. And another thing that demonstrates our opponents cannot argue is their claims that there's a 97% consensus of scientists who claim that carbon dioxide from human activity is a danger and needs to be cut. When you look at their figures and you analyze it, and there's been a peer-reviewed paper led by Dr. David Legetz with scientists and statisticians who analyzed this claim by John Cook, a false, fabricated claim misrepresenting science, misrepresenting nature. David Legetz and his co-authors analyzed John Cook's 97% consensus claim and found out when you go through the actual data, there is not a 97% consensus. There is a 0.3% smattering, and not one of those 0.3% smattering has any evidence that carbon dioxide from human activity.
You are being very kind. That work by Cook was fraud. There were 10,000 people who were sent a survey. These are people who put bread and wine on the table from frightening us witless about climate. Out of those 10,000 who received Cook's survey, only 3,000 replied. He chose 77 of those 3,000 replies to publish. One reply wasn't really in agreement, and that was the 3%. So this was a very, very selective survey, picking out certain information and then telling us that 97% of scientists believe this or that. Well, belief is not a word of science. It's a word of religion and politics. The second thing is that science is not like politics, where we all put up a hand and say, yes, we believe that the Earth is flat and we believe that the sun rotates around the Earth. Science doesn't work like that. It works on reproducible evidence. That was fraud. Now, Australia exports a lot of black stuff that's called coal. A lot of that comes from your state, Queensland. But John Cook was in Queensland, and we exported not black coal, but his black soul went to another country. We've got rid of him. Thanks be to the Lord.
Well said. And then let's move on to NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies. It's a tiny group within NASA. And then there's a tiny, tiny group within the Goddard Institute of Space Studies that is responsible for climate studies. We've heard so many times that NASA is saying that this climate claims, the climate sphere is all justified. And yet I had correspondence when I entered the Senate as a senator in Australia, and I held Director Gavin Schmidt accountable for some of the work that NASA was doing in corruptly modifying temperature data to raise temperatures artificially. And in his first response back, he made a slip, and he showed that inadvertently he made serious contradictions. So when I held him accountable for these contradictions, he stopped writing to me. They reversed their claims about Iceland temperature data tampering and reduced them down again. I mean, NASA itself has never said that the climate is a problem. A tiny group of people, activists within the NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies, has said that. And these people need to be held to account. It's just fraud again that NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies, led by Gavin Schmidt and the previous alarmist James Hansen, have spread this nonsense. We've got letters from NASA's senior administrators, astronauts who've had to rely on science, stating that these guys are speaking bullshit.
Well, we once used to have respect for an institution, be that the CSIRO, be that a university, be that the church. We once had respect for an institution. Now, we now live in a society where anything goes. This is the attack on Western civilization, and climate change is only part of it. But we are attacking Christian religions. We are attacking Parliament. We saw that recently in the Senate in Australia, where one senator being sworn in gave a Black Power salute and wanted to insult the Queen. This respect for institutions is disappearing. They are always under attack. And in some cases, like NASA, they do it to themselves. In some cases, and I would argue it's in part the churches have done this, they've done it to themselves. So we're living in a society where anything goes, where all opinions are equal. There is no informed opinion. There is no respect for anything or anyone, yet the same people want to be respected. I think respect has to be earned. I don't think because you are an oxygen thief that you're automatically qualified to get respect.
Hear, hear. Let's move on now. Some people, I know you have heard about the Stern Report. That's a fraudulent document that was developed in Britain for the government to push this climate rubbish. We had our own equivalent version of the Stern Report in Australia. It was the Garnaut Report, which from memory was released in 2008. I think it was initially a state initiative, but then when Kevin Rudd entered power as a prime minister in late 2007, he adopted it as well, and I think he pushed it. And I'll just go to that because a lot of people in our country think that the Garnaut Report had scientific proof that we need to cut human carbon dioxide. So I'm going to read from chapter 2 of Garnaut's report, which was used to push the narrative that we need to cut carbon dioxide from human activity. Chapter 2 is titled Understanding Climate Science. It states, key points. The review takes as its starting point on the balance of probabilities and not as a matter of belief. I'm sorry, I can't help laughing. I'll start again. The review takes as its starting point on the balance of probabilities and not as a matter of belief the majority opinion of the Australian and international scientific communities that human activities resulted in substantial global warming from the mid-20th century and that continued growth in greenhouse gas concentrations caused by human-induced emissions would generate high risks of dangerous climate change. No evidence anywhere, and yet the media, the politicians, run around saying the Garnaut Report is scientific proof. Ian, what the hell is going on?
Oh, it's very simple. We've had every major institution taken over by activists. We have activists in the church. We have activists in universities. We have activists in schools. The public service is absolutely full of activists. These people are driving the ship because politicians get reappointed every couple of years. These people can outlive them. These people can outstay them. So we've had the march of the left. It's been a 40-year march into all of the institutions. The biggest damage they have done is to dumb down the education system such that all of the people now in middle level, be they in government, be they in business, have undergone this activist education. So we've totally been taken over by activists. And for me, it's not a war that you can fight. You can fight as we are doing, as guerrilla fighters, but we have to wait for the inevitable. And the inevitable will be a financial crisis. And then ultimately people will say, well, wait a minute, we used to be a very wealthy nation. What happened? So this is why it's extremely important to keep fighting the fight. We've lost it. We haven't infiltrated the system 40 or 50 years ago. The left did that. But ultimately, there is a price to pay. And the price to pay is going to be very, very nasty indeed. So we have to keep these arguments on the record. We have to keep arguing. We have to fight everything. Now, for example, we have this absolute trivial argument now about the burping and farting of cattle. So just hear out a very simple argument. Grass grows by using carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. The cattle eat that grass and burp and fart out some of the carbon as methane and carbon dioxide, and the rest of the carbon ends up in meat, in the skin, and in bones. We eat that meat, that's sequestered for a little while. The bones, the carbon is sequestered for a little while. And in the leather that we have, it's sequestered for even longer in, say, our footwear. So if cattle are so bad and eating this grass and farting out methane, and belching out methane, what happens if we took the cattle off the ground? We took the cattle off the fields, then the grass would rot. And the grass would give out methane when it rots. And the same number of atoms of carbon that went in to grow that grass, the same number of atoms of carbon that either are extracted by cattle or extracted by rotting of the grass. Now, that is a total furphy that we're being fed by our climate activists. So what's happened is the vegans have got in to the climate activist groups, and they're trying to tell us we shouldn't be eating meat and we're destroying the climate. So we've got all these sorts of crazies now have attracted themselves to the vegan to the vegan groups in the climate groups. Now, I've had a bit to do with vegans when I used to take university field excursions. These geological field excursions were interesting because the meat eaters were the first ones to the top of the mountain. The vegetarians were about halfway up, and the vegans were still trying to work out how to get out of the vehicle.
Okay. Well, I want to continue that line in a minute, but first I'm going to go to the Inter-Academy Council. If I can collect my thoughts after that. The Inter-Academy Council, you've heard of that as a noted scientist, yes, Professor Plimer.
Yes, yes. I'm in one of the major academies, but they don't represent my view and they don't listen to my science.
Yes, and well, we could talk about the Australian Academy of Science, which has completely lost the plot on climate science. But anyway, the Inter-Academy...
Those academies, yep, stay alive by government funding. And right, they have to play in the same key from the same musical script as the government, otherwise they don't get funding. So this is not fearless and free information that the academies are giving. It's already contaminated.
Right. And so we've been told many times that all the major science academies around the world support this rubbish about climate being affected by carbon dioxide from human activity. None of them have ever provided the evidence. But the Inter-Academy Council, which is the combination of many of these national bodies, put out a damning report about 10 years ago, an absolutely damning report about the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It is the UN's climate science body was just shown to be completely incompetent and dishonest and unscientific, and no one raised an eyebrow. Now, I also want to talk about what I call the rat's nest of climate alarmist academics. These people, in my mind, are not scientists at all, but they've been paraded as scientists. They've been funded by government taxpayers, funded by us, to misrepresent the science. I'm going to read their names out because these people will be very familiar to some. Tim Flannery, many false forecasts which have caused enormous damage, including costing people's lives. Professor Will Steffen, a chemical engineer. Professor David Caroli, a former meteorologist. Ove Hegelberg, and I've challenged Ove Hegelberg and Tim Flannery to debate, and poor old Tim didn't know which way was up, and his publisher just dragged him away from me. Ove Hegelberg would not debate me. John Cook would not debate me. Another one of these academics, they're not scientists because they don't follow the scientific principle. A scientist is someone who follows a scientific process. Matthew England, a climate modeler, mathematician, I believe. Leslie Hughes, Kurt Lambeck, Andy Pittman, Ross Garnaut, and then we have a man called Stefan Lewandowski. And Stefan Lewandowski is I think he's got something to do with a behavioral scientist, and he made claims that if you don't agree with these people, then you're a nut job. So, I mean, these people have been funded by government. They've been appointed to the Climate Commission by the Gillard government. They've been fated by the Liberals. They have been funded to spread misrepresentations of climate. I'm trying to find a comment. Would you, if you could make a comment while I'm looking for a summary assessment
just
of
a very brief
Tim
comment.
Flannery's report?
These people are funded to put us out of work. Therefore, the amount of revenue collected by taxation will be less. So why not save yourself the pain and not fund them now? And then we do not decrease taxation by having people put out of work by their processes. Now, can you imagine trying to run a foundry and you're trying to pour some bronze and the power goes off? If that freezes, then you have a real problem. Can you imagine how your electricity bill, which you have in an electric arc furnace, you have an electricity bill that's just gone through the roof? Ultimately, you are going to close that business and put people out of work, or you might shift the business to Thailand or somewhere like that. This is what's happening. Those climate policies, which are catastrophic for the average person, are driven by the elites, funded from the taxes of the average person. It is time to say enough.
Right. And I'm going to read some figures before we go to the break. We'll have the ad break, the last of the hour. And then I'd like you to come back, when we come back, Ian, if you could talk about the fact that Australia is already at net zero and beyond it, because our sinks of carbon dioxide absorb more carbon dioxide than all of our production. But I want to read these figures. Dr. Wes Allen wrote what is the first known detailed review of Tim Flannery's book entitled The Weathermakers. Dr. Allen's review reveals that 307 statements in Tim Flannery's book created 577 problems, with some of Tim Flannery's statements creating multiple problems. This Dr. Allen is a meticulous researcher, and he's put it out there in public, listed them, shown them. And what he's done is he said that baseless extreme comments in Tim Flannery's book, 14. Baseless dogmatic comments, 103. Suspect sources of his points, 51. Half-truths, 85. The claims that there's absolute no uncertainty in what he's saying, 48. Misrepresentations, 7. Misinterpretations, 26. Exaggerations, 78. Factual errors, 70. Confusing or silly statements, 43. Contradictory statements, 31. Failed predictions, 11. Mistakes, 10. A grand total of problems, 577 in just a book that's about 200 pages long. This is what passes for science amongst the Labor Party, the Liberal Party, the National Party, the Greens, and amongst these climate activists who are masquerading as scientists when they're really academics and not scientists. So we'll go for the break, and then we'll come back and listen to Ian Plimer.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Here we go again. Another dodgy election in Maricopa County, Arizona. Maricopa is Arizona's most populous county, comprising the capital city of Phoenix and surrounding suburbs, and is pivotal in this year's GOP gubernatorial contest between Trump-endorsed and MAGA Institute America First certified candidate Carrie Lake and Mike Pence-endorsed GOP establishment candidate Karen Taylor Robson. Carrie was down most of the night until the election day of ballots came in and went on to win comfortably by 12,000 votes. But wait, no, there's more votes to count. Now that we know how many Carrie has, we need to keep counting until we can get Karen over the top. Oh, we're going to stop counting for the evening and we'll count again tomorrow. And we're going to keep counting until we find enough ballots to put Karen in the nominee slot. This has to end. The real problem in Arizona, if there's a dispute, guess who arbitrates it? That's right, the Secretary of State, who also happens to be the Democrat nominee, Katie Hobbs. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check NHTSA.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Solar power is supposed to help the environment. Modern economies require power 24/7, not just when the sun shines. And storing power is very expensive. Peak electricity demand in many nations with service-based economies occurs late in the day as the sun is setting. And cloud cover means we can never depend on solar power. Photovoltaic solar panel production is very resource intensive. Coal is the primary energy source used for photovoltaic panel production. And China, the world's biggest coal producer and consumer, produces 2/3 of the world's solar panels. While solar panels have a limited life of around 2 decades, some fail well before then. But nearly all solar panels currently go to landfill, as the cost of recycling is so high.
news more twisted than soap operas, and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Over to you, Ian Plimer. We're with Ian Plimer, and this is Senator Malcolm Roberts in broadcasting from Australia. We are now going to hear one of the best scientists in the world discuss why we are already at net zero and beyond.
We are very lucky in Australia to have a continent with very, very few inhabitants. We have a large area of grasslands, rangelands, and forests, and a lot of cropland, and the few people that live in this country live in a coastal fringe and mainly in cities. We are not a country of Crocodile Dundees out in the bush. We're a country of people who actually live in cities. So when we look at the amount of carbon dioxide that we release from heavy industries in Australia, and we smelt a lot of the world's aluminium and zinc and lead and copper, that puts carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. The bulk of our energy comes from hydrocarbons, be it diesel, be it coal for electricity. And when we look at the amount of energy that we create, we could not run this country without coal. However, when we look at how much of the carbon dioxide is absorbed into these grasslands, rangelands, forest crops, and the continental shelf, we absorb about 10 times as much carbon dioxide than we emit. We should therefore go to Paris and say, pay up. We want countries like Mauritania and Chad and poor countries of the world to pay us because we are absorbing their carbon dioxide emissions. The whole system of net zero is bonkers. Net zero is a vocabulary invented by people who want different ways of taxing you. It's got nothing to do with the environment. It's got everything to do with power and money.
And that leads on to something that I want to raise. The core problem here is shitty governance, comprising gutless politicians ceding our sovereignty. There is no scientific data or framework on which they base these policies. The policies today in Australia are based on looking good, not doing good, looking after vested interests and globalist predators. And Ian, I think you're well aware that the man who started this climate fraud was Maurice Strong from Canada. I haven't got the time to go into the details. He was a criminal who exiled himself, wanted by American authorities, the police, law enforcement agencies. He was exiled in China. He came back to Canada to die in Ottawa in 2015. He is in his policies, his scam that he initiated. He was a part owner and a director of the Chicago Climate Exchange, where billions of dollars of carbon dioxide emissions trading system credits would be funneled through. Al Gore, the company he owns, Generation Management Investment, is also a part owner of the Chicago Climate Exchange. We are taking money from poor people, asking aged pensioners to make a choice between staying warm and eating. And these bastards are stealing money to live like Riley. No science, enormous crippling costs imposed on people. And the people pay with their wallets, with their jobs, with their lifestyle, with their lives, for no benefit to the environment, no benefit to humanity. And these grubs steal billions of dollars. And then we've got other billionaires who are sponsoring people into parliament so that they can keep their subsidies for solar and wind going. This is a complete scam, and it is an inhuman scam. What do you say, Professor?
Well, that's exactly right. This is probably the biggest scam we have seen in the history of time. In terms of science, it's probably the greatest delusional science that we've seen since the times just before Galileo. In terms of morality, we have sunk to new depths. And in terms of responsibility, there is none. In my scientific career, I have been working in universities and outside universities. When I was outside universities, I was funded by industry. If I got it wrong, I lost my job. When in a university, if I got it wrong, it didn't matter. I was able to publish and move on. In science, if you get it wrong, there are no consequences. In sociology, if you get it wrong, you get promoted. So we have lost the ethical basis of science. And I think this structural breakdown of institutional ethics is one of the reasons why your Maurice Strong and these others have been able to thrive, and there's a whole army of acolytes there feeding off those who pay them, and eventually they are going to kill those who pay them. This is why I called my latest book Green Murder. This process has taken 40 or 50 years to get there, and the only way I can see we can get out of this mess is to have a deeply destructive recession.
And that's a very sad thing to say, because I'd like to finish on a positive, which we'll come to in a minute. I'm with Professor Ian Rutherford Plimer, one of the world's best scientists, highly awarded, a prolific author. We have been discussing my letter to the Four Amigos on climate, the previous Prime Minister, the previous Deputy Prime Minister, the previous opposition leader, and the then and current Greens leader, Adam Bandt. You can find that letter at malcolmrobertsqld.com.au. Just scroll down to the climate fraud icon, and then click on that, and then scroll down to Letter to the Leaders, the Climate Change Scam. And you can see what we've been talking about. I want to mention Professor Plimer's books. These cover a huge gamut of interest, everything from serious scientific to discussions about humanity to basic books like Mineral Collecting Localities of the Broken Hill District for people who are interested in rocks. Another book, Telling Lies for God. Let's just think about the diversity of this man's ability. Next one, A Journey Through Stone. Mineral Collecting Localities of the Broken Hill, Tibooburra and White Cliffs Areas. This man gets down into the details. Mylos, Geologic History, A Short History of Planet Earth, Heaven and Earth, Global Warming, The Missing Science, How to Get Expelled from School. Now that is a ripper. So is that Heaven and Earth. Not for Greens. And then Ian has taken up the cudgel of protecting humanity. Heaven and Earth, again, Climate Change Delusion and the Great Electricity Ripoff, Green Murder, A Life Sentence of Net Zero with No Parole. Go to Connor Court Publishing. They have been your publishers, I think, all the time, Professor Plimer. Anything to add to that? Because I find your books fascinating.
Well, I've published a number of bestsellers in the past through major international publishers like Random House. And I had also published stuff through the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And when I had the manuscript of Heaven and Earth ready to go, no publisher would touch me because I was questioning human-induced climate change. And it was eventually a very small husband and wife publisher that took it on. It made them a fortune. It was an international bestseller. So for those of you out there who are thinking of publishing your ideas, it's quite often not the major publishers that will touch you. They're not interested at all in the issue. They're only interested in making money. And when Heaven and Earth was really humming away and selling very well, I had a publisher ring me and say, look, we'd like to republish your book, A Short History of Planet Earth. And I said, well, that book came out 20 years ago and the science has moved on. That some of the science that I wrote there now has been replaced by better science and there are better ideas. I'm not prepared to republish something that is knowingly wrong. And they were persisting, telling me I'd make a fortune. I wasn't interested in that. I'm interested in facts and speaking the truth. That makes me controversial.
And we appreciate you so much, because there are so few scientists these days, so few politicians who will do that. I'm going to leave the final word to Professor Plimer, but before I do that, this is Malcolm Roberts, Senator in Australia. I am staunchly pro-human and a believer in the inherent goodness in human beings. Please remember to listen to each other, love one another, stay proud of who we are as humans, take a minute to appreciate the abundance all around us. Ian, over to you. You have 1 minute to tell us why we need to get back to basics and be so positive about Australia. We have the people, the resources, we have the opportunity, the potential. Mate, what do you want to say? And thank you so much.
There are very few people on this continent. We are blessed with resources. If we look at history, countries or nations with very few people and a lot of resources inevitably got invaded. Go and talk to the Carthaginians or the Etruscans. Go and talk to those that Alexander the Great invaded. The only way this country can be strong is to use its resources and its humans to have a vibrant economy, a big defence system, and people who are great lovers and supporters of their country. And when I finally shuffle off, I just hope someone will in the eulogy say, "He gave the cage a bloody good rattle."
Thank you so much, Professor Ian Plimer. Well done.